Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This is the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. And now, the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada.
Stock investors are sitting on the sidelines until they get to read the Federal Reserve minutes later today. But what I can tell you is an interesting trade is the yield on the 10-year Treasury has dropped from, gosh, I think it was around 175, 180 last week. And right now, the 10-year Treasury is trading at 164. Good morning, everybody. It's Barry and Chuck back with you for the second hour of the Financial Exchange. And, you know, it's Joe Biden has this infrastructure spending plan in mind, Chuck, and it, you know, there's some parts of it that I think are legitimate and you know, warrant further discussion. There's parts of it that I don't understand what it has to do with infrastructure. I guess my question is, does he have a prayer of getting this through? I think he does.
Yeah, I think it's very likely that something ends up getting through. Whether it's this specific bill or not, I think that's a legitimate question because, as you mentioned, there are parts of this bill that don't have anything to do with infrastructure. I mean, and, you know, we've talked all about the, you know, there's supposedly a second bill on, quote, social infrastructure, which we, you know, kind of ragged on and said, okay, that has nothing to do with infrastructure. But even when you look at, you know, some of the stuff that's in this bill, as you mentioned, you know, $400 billion for care for seniors.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with infrastructure? And I saw Cecilia Rouse was interviewed, I think, yesterday or maybe the day before, saying, look, if I don't have someone to care for mom and dad, I can't go to work. How is that not infrastructure? Well, by that equation, my breakfast is infrastructure, because if I don't have breakfast, I'm grumpy and I can't go to work. So let's be honest about what we're doing here. If you want to do infrastructure, do infrastructure. Right. If you want to do health care and education and those things, do those. But call them what they are. Okay.
Do you think there's any, you know, a lot of Republicans are in favor of an infrastructure plan. I think 57% of those polled said, yeah, I want to see an infrastructure plan. So is there any shot? Does Biden have any shot of gaining some Republican support on this?
Not on this bill as it stands today. I think there is a 0.0% chance that on the bill as it stands today, and I say bill, there's not even a bill. This is a proposal from the Biden administration. Remember, all legislation starts in Congress. It doesn't start in with the president. So I think that at some point this summer, it is very clear that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer want to take up an infrastructure bill. And so I think it is very likely that you get something moving. How much of, you know, what's included in this Biden proposal actually makes it into that bill? I think that's a real question here. And so what I will say is, again, the plan that the Biden administration has put on the table, 0% chance of getting any Republican support, would have to be passed through using reconciliation again. In terms of, you know, what ends up making its way through and how it ends up, you know, working its way into action, whether you see corresponding tax hikes. Here's my guess. If you want to pin me down right now, I think you get a bill that's probably 2/3 the size. So instead of being $2 trillion, 1.2 to 1.5 trillion, somewhere in that ballpark. You know, that's where I think it probably ends up landing. I think you end up with a corresponding tax package that's probably about $1 trillion in tax increases, so offsetting some of it in terms of cost. And the centerpiece of that is going to be a shift in the corporate tax rate, not the 28%. I think we're talking 25 or 26%.
Yeah, there's a lot of Democrats that are really opposed to going to 28. Manchin's leading the charge. But the, you know, he claims that there's six or seven Republican or Democrats that would not support a 28% tax increase or 28% corporate tax rate. I was surprised to see Bezos, Jeff Bezos, chiming in on this. Like, yeah, I've been I don't blame him for being in favor of infrastructure because he uses our roads and highways a lot. But I was surprised that he would be in favor of an increase in the corporate tax rate.
You think Jeff Bezos is going to end up paying the corporate tax rate?
True. They don't pay much in the way of taxes, do they?
No, it's not going to be something that affects Amazon just because two reasons. Number one, they are a company that I give them credit. They reinvest a ton of money into that company. So profits are typically pretty slim at Amazon. They post them, but they're not, you know, a company that's no, they're not an Apple where it's, hey, we've got, you know, $30 billion profit this quarter. So number one, profits are slim there. And number two, just look at the lobbying numbers. Amazon will figure out ways to get around it. You know, they get the best lobbyist money can buy. So Jeff Bezos is not threatened by the prospect of higher corporate taxes because Jeff Bezos doesn't think they'll have to pay higher corporate taxes at Amazon.
Good point. There's an organization called Social Finance. It's a nonprofit, and on the surface, it looks like a compelling story. This is an organization that will train workers. In this particular story, they're talking about training diesel mechanics, which we have a shortage of right now. And the diesel mechanics don't pay for their education until they land a job, and then part of their paycheck goes back to paying for the cost of their education. I like the idea. I'm just wondering why you don't see corporations doing this. Like, is it the role of a nonprofit to do this, or is it the role of a company like Lockheed Martin or Electric Boat to do something like this?
It is interesting just that the idea of a company paying for training, especially for entry-level workers, it doesn't seem to be that popular. And I guess on one level I understand why, because there's so much job mobility now that the last thing that you want to do is pay to train a worker and then have them leave and go work for a competitor, or go, you know, something like that. But even that, there are ways to mitigate that where you say, look, this is a $20,000 training program that we need to do. We'll cover the cost, but in return, you've got to stay with us for 5 years. Otherwise, we're going to ask for that money back when you leave. You know, there are ways to hedge your risk if you're really concerned about it, because you look back through economic history, whether you're talking about the 1950s, the 1920s, the 1850s, and apprenticeships and training programs were huge parts of, you know, many professions as a way to train workers. It wasn't, hey, we're going to send you to this school or that school. It was, no, we're going to train you on the job, and here's how, you know, you do what you do. But there wasn't as much mobility from a job perspective then. I mean, think about how long people stayed in jobs in previous generations compared to what we see today.
What happened to that, though, Chuck? I mean, that was apprenticeship programs. I mean, you don't hear about apprenticeship programs that often anymore. You know, I have a friend who's he's an apprentice electrician, but it's, you know, that's a sign. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation is a sign that we have a robust economy and that there's going to be worker shortages if there aren't already.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you still have them in the trades in a number of places, right? It still is, you know, prevalent on that side of things. But I think quite honestly, companies, they've just moved away from viewing that as something that is their role. And if you want me to, you know, opine on why that might be, I'm just going to take another opportunity to rip business school people who only see dollars and cents. And they're like, oh, we're paying for this. Like, nope, you can't do that. We don't want to pay for training. Let's find someone cheaper and have someone else do it so that we can improve cash flow. Right. And in turn, again, I am someone who believes that MBAs are the death of creativity and true, you know, true workmanship in the business world, because it's all dollars and cents. Oh, we're paying this person $150,000. Nope, let's get rid of him and replace him with someone who we only pay $75,000.
Do you know what MBA stands for?
Mostly, no. I can't say it. I can't say it. No.
Mediocre, but arrogant.
Yeah, I
that's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's, I would say it's not to knock business schools, but it is. It is to knock business schools. I think that business schools so often teach to, hey, here's how you manage a balance sheet and cash flow and this and that. And, you know, you become a number cruncher. And there's so much more to business than just this is how much this person cost. This is how much revenue they brought in. It's what are they doing behind the scenes in terms of how do they, you know, integrate into your overall culture? What do they do as far as, you know, the products they've helped develop? How much institutional knowledge do they have? Mm-hmm. And MBAs don't care about any of that. MBAs look at it and they say, you cost X, we can bring someone in for Y, you're gone. And that's it. And that's, I think that the proliferation of business school graduates as the managers for businesses has produced a monoculture that is incredibly boring, incredibly stunted, and doesn't value any kind of real creativity in the world. And that's why, as much as I might rip on Elon Musk sometimes,
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
He didn't go to business school, so I like the guy. Like, you know, he's a wild card, and you need some of the, every team needs a little bit of crazy on it. Like, you look at every look at every sports team that's ever won a championship, and you have your lunch pail guys. You have the ones who show up every day, and they go to work, and they do what they But you need
you got your Tim Thomases of the world, you know.
You got your Tim Thomases. You got Kevin Garnett slamming his head against the backboard. You got, you know, Johnny Damon and Kevin Millar taking shots before the World Series. You need a little bit of nuttiness to break things up and think outside the box sometimes.
Yep. Hey, up next we're going to be joined by Aaron Zitner from the Wall Street Journal. We're going to be talking about his most recent story. Here's the headline. Calls grow to abandon regulations that were eased under COVID. Well, I think there's a lot of people that would be in favor of that. Aaron Zitner, Wall Street Journal, joins us next on the Financial Exchange. And, Tucker, are we playing trivia before Aaron or after Aaron?
We'll do it after. That's fine.
Very good.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Asset protection and estate planning go hand in hand. Saying you're leaving everything to your kids might sound simple, but it isn't, especially if your children have problems of their own. If you're considering the best way to keep your assets in your family while avoiding significant financial consequences down the road, it's time to call Todd Lutsky at Cushing & Dolan. Todd is an expert in estate planning and taxation, and his new guide, out right now, can help you understand the best ways to leave assets to your beneficiaries. Leaving assets to our children is commonplace, but there are important steps that you should take before simply putting their names in the dotted line. Call 866-848-5699 today and ask for Todd's new guide called How to Leave Assets to Your Beneficiaries. This guide will help you understand the safest paths to take so that you and your children are firmly protected. The last 12 months have been rough, and it'd be easy to overlook these issues as you're planning for later life. Get your guide today by calling 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or you can download it from our website at LegalExchangeShow.com. Wall Street's volatility has been off the charts over the last 2 years, but markets have still reached record highs. Will we see more growth this year? Stay with us for breaking business news all morning long, only here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Don't have time to catch the entire show? Check out our new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money. We'll talk about the latest economic trends and all the breaking business news you want. It's Dumb Questions for Smart Money with Paul Lane and Emma David. Find it on our website, financialexchangeshow.com, or subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. We're joined now by Aaron Zitner from the Wall Street Journal, here to talk about some of the regulations that municipalities abandoned during COVID and whether or not they're going to stick around in a post-COVID world. Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to be with you.
Aaron, when we talk about regulations that were changed in the last year, we're not talking about, you know, changes to building codes and things like that. We're not talking about, you know, whether or not you need to have fire alarms and things like that. But hey, take out, you know, mixed drinks, telehealth appointments, online notary services. These are the kinds of things that we're talking about. Can you first talk to us just a little bit about this, the scale of the change that we saw across the landscape?
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of regulations were suspended for the duration of the pandemic because government officials were, one, looking for ways to keep everyone safe and make it easier to stick with social distancing, and two, to help businesses do business better and to have income and to stay afloat. The breadth of this was pretty large. I mean, states in some cases allowed you to get married over Zoom. They made it a lot easier to see a doctor through video conferencing, especially even doctors who were in different states and might not be licensed in your state. And a lot of steps were taken to help restaurants stores stay in touch with consumers and stay afloat by allowing them to, in the case of restaurants, deliver alcohol in sealed bottles or to include cocktails to go in their to-go kits and in their takeout meals.
So in terms of the regulations now that are seeing the most pushback to try to make those changes permanent, which ones are you hearing from people are kind of front and center as far as, hey, this is a good thing, we want to keep these changes in place?
Well, the most action is around two areas, one, healthcare, and the other in restaurants and food delivery, for a couple of reasons. One, people just like it. You know, we've all gotten used to the convenience. And two, the technology was just on the cusp or was already with us. And if it was on the cusp, coronavirus just pushed it along. And by that, I mean, a few years ago, telehealth wasn't so widespread. Not everyone had Wi-Fi. Not everyone even had computers in their homes. And now we all have the infrastructure to be able to video conference, and we've gotten more comfortable with it. And the second is the rise of apps. I mean, we now have Grubhub and Uber Eats, and these things have become popular right before coronavirus. And then coronavirus comes along, and the technology is in place to get people to embrace even more using video conferencing and using apps to talk to doctors and to order food from your restaurants. And consumers have come to expect it. Why should I get in a car and go see an MD or a psychotherapist if I can do it just as well online? Why not have my food delivered to me in an hour? If it can be done, why not do it? But in a lot of cases, rules need to be changed to make these services available permanently, because the rules that allow them will expire at the end of the pandemic.
In terms of how these changes make their way into being, you know, permanent ones, how far along are different state legislatures or different state governments in terms of trying to actually make these changes? Is this something that we're going to be seeing as soon as this spring, or is it going to take longer to see how this all shakes out?
Well, one or two of the big ones have to do with Medicare, which is a big part of the economy and very important, as we all know, and that will take place in Congress, and that has largely to do with what services Medicare will pay for that are provided by telehealth. It was very restricted. Medicare would only pay for telehealth services in the past if you lived in a rural area, and even then you couldn't even access it from home. You had to go to a special point of contact, like some medical facility, and then you could use the telehealth. But most of this is going state by state, and the rules vary by state. And what we're seeing is that there are fights in a lot of cases, because when one part of the economy, one set of interests is allowed to make more money, it can create competition and take money away from another one. So, for instance, if you're a convenience store operator or a package store and you get a certain amount of business from folks stopping by on their way home from work to pick up a six-pack, you may not like it that the restaurant down the block can now sell cocktails to go or sell sealed bottles of alcohol along with their takeout meals. That's competition for you. And so we're seeing some trade groups step up and say, wait a minute, the rules were just fine beforehand. We made some allowances during coronavirus, but why make the change permanent? Let's go back to the way it was.
Very good. Aaron, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the time today.
Glad to be with you.
Aaron Zitner from the Wall Street Journal talking about the changes to a number of regulations that have the potential to reshape businesses for years to come here.
You know, it's he raises some good points, and I think one thing, the takeaway for me on that is, you know, the virus, as terrible as it's been, and the loss of life and the loss of business opportunities that have occurred during the last year, it has propelled us somewhere between, I don't know, 3 and 10 years in terms of using the technology that's been available to us, right? Like tele-doc appointments, they're fantastic, right? You know, you can accomplish so much on that type of appointment. And then I do a lot of my business meetings now online, and I find clients like them. I had a meeting last night at 6 o'clock with people out on the coast. It was fabulous, as opposed to getting on a plane and flying, you know, 6 hours to get out there and all the work that went into it and the expense that went into it. I think we're going to find that the virus makes us more efficient, and the technological advancements are going to make us a lot more efficient going forward.
Yeah, I think that, and again, some of these things we're going to need a little bit more time just to see how well they stick. But there's no doubt that we compressed a ton of advancement into a short period of time. And now it's going to be, how does this all shake out over the next 3 to 5 years? I mean, no one quite knows still how this is all going to play out as far as, you know, business travel and where do people want to live and how many companies actually support remote work. None of us really know. We have educated guesses, but no one knows for sure.
I was talking to a salesman the other day, Chuck, and he's on the road again. He is flying. He said he's flying more now. He's all vaccinated and everything. He's flying more now than he did prior to the virus, and he said he is killing it financially because a lot of his competitors aren't on the road yet. And he's a small independent guy, manufacturer's rep, and he is crushing it. He's flying all over the country getting orders because he's like the only guy that'll actually show up and do an in-person meeting. So good for him. Hey, coming up, we will be playing trivia on the Financial Exchange.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
This week in American history, John Tyler was officially sworn in as President of the United States after the death of which president, who had just become the first president to die in office? That's our trivia question today. If you know the answer, text it to us at 63566. We will take the 8th correct answer that we received to that question. This week in American history, John Tyler was officially sworn in after the death of which president who had just become the first president to die in office? That's our trivia question for this morning. Chuck, let's talk about Facebook and Apple and Niantic and these augmented reality glasses that are becoming all the rage. You know a lot more about this stuff than I do.
Yeah, I just don't really like this.
No. So, augmented. See, I want to be able to go to a Patriots game without actually going to the Patriots game. That's not what this is at all.
That's not what
it's
this
not?
Is.
No.
No. No. These are glasses where you go to the Patriots game, and while you're wearing these glasses, it shows you prop bets that you can make on the game, or it shows you
your fantasy team or whatever.
Your fantasy team or how many points you have while you're watching the game and things like that. And it points out, oh, like you could say, who's player number 27? And it'll show up on your eyes as that's whoever it is, J.C. Jackson.
Or Barry, while you're walking down the street, you're wearing these and you see navigation right in front of you.
Huh.
Yeah, so turn left here. It shows up on your glasses. So I have real privacy concerns on these, number one. and number two, I don't know.
How much are they going to cost?
Thousands of dollars. Well, it's just not a technology that for the average person, I think, is useful. Now, there are all kinds of potential commercial applications. You know, if you are
doctors,
someone, not even doctor, like just if you're a mechanic, okay, and you say, let's say you're fixing a plane, instead of having to go back and forth, you know, reading a manual or something like that,
right?
As you're looking at the work being done in front of you, it can show you turn this to the left, turn this, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I think is useful. Mm-hmm. But you know, all these companies they want to have this kind of device just because, again, they see this as one step closer to the holy grail of, hey, reduce the friction between a person and their buying habits, and you're able to, you know, generate more sales. So you're walking down the street, and as you pass a JCPenney, bad example, as you pass a Subway, Subway says, hey, come in right now, Barry, and we'll have a $2 sub for you instead of a $5 footlong.
Okay,
great. I'll walk right in there. Yeah. I want nothing to do with this, and this to me is just something that I don't get. And maybe I'm getting old, maybe I'm getting cranky, but I have too many privacy concerns and too many I just don't want to be bothered that much. I get marketed to all the time. Why do I need more of that?
Right. I hear you.
So that's kind of where I stand. But these companies, as you mentioned, they're spending a bunch of money to try to develop these things. My guess is someone might end up buying these. I mean, I don't know, but this is a bridge too far for me. It's just
we've been talking about this stuff for years now, and it doesn't seem like we've made any progress. Like the headset, so we can go to a Celtics game. Right? Remember we talked about that? Like
that's virtual reality.
Yeah, that's what I want.
So, and so there is some progress that's being made there. The big thing is there's just a ton of computing power that's needed in order to do that. Yeah. And so we've had to play catch up. So there's some work that's been needed to be done. I think the next few years on the VR side may be more interesting as far as, you know, being able to attend sporting events through a headset in your home. There's some stuff that's percolating there. But on this augmented reality stuff, I don't need ads popping up in front of my face. Like, what is this, Minority Report? I don't need this crap.
That's what it feels like. I feel like you're going to walk by a Subway and it's going to be like, hey, just a quick reminder, it's 20% off a $6 footlong or something like that. Yeah.
But you already get that when you're using Google Maps or Waze or anything like that.
Yeah, but I don't have it in front of my eyes.
Oh, poor
guy. Hey, Chuck Zada, remember the last time you bought a t-shirt and it didn't fit? Like, I don't need that, you know? So
tell us how you
anyways,
really feel.
This is not for me. What is for me, though, is the new guide from the Armstrong Advisory Group. We've been talking earlier today about the potential changes coming from the Biden tax plan. We've got a guide available this month that is on this exact topic. It's titled The Biden Tax Plan, Fact or Fiction. And the way to get it is by going to armstrongadvisory.com and clicking on the monthly guide button. It's all about the different proposals that the Biden administration has put out on the corporate tax, on income taxes, capital gains taxes, the estate tax, a whole bunch of different taxes under consideration. So if you want to know what the Biden administration is proposing, and you want to know how likely it is that these proposals make it into reality, that's what this guide will tell you. It's titled The Biden Tax Plan, Fact or Fiction, and it's available by going to Armstrong Advisory, clicking the monthly guide button, and then you can download it right now at no cost to you.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated, Charles Zada representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
We saw a rapid rise in the yield on the 10-year Treasury. Over the last year, it's gone from, gosh, I think last summer it might have been as low as 50 basis points, and now it's, the last time I looked, Chuck, it was 165. The result of that has been mortgage refinancing demand has dropped 20%, and rates now are at a 10-month high, mortgage rates.
Yeah, you've got rates moving up, and again, they're not historically low, because I guess in order to be historically low, you have to be like as low as you can possibly be.
Yep.
But again, rates are at a 10-month high. 11 months ago, rates were still higher than this. So I look at this, and obviously there has been a significant amount of refinancing activity over the last year. So number one, the pool of available refis is just much smaller than it was 12 months ago. But rates moving up, obviously, it's going to hurt a little bit there. So, yeah, if you're a mortgage banker right now, you're still busy, but you're not saying, I need to hire three more people to handle all the volume anymore.
Right.
That's kind of the sense that I've gotten. I do think that demand is going to continue to drop off over the remainder of the year. But it's something where, hey, just because rates have, you know, rebounded off of, just because you can't get a 30-year for, you know, 2.6 anymore, and now it's 3 or 3.1. Hey, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to do business, just that, yeah, the pool of available refinances has shrunk dramatically. I mean, I refinanced twice last year, so I'm out of the game.
You're a serial
I'm
refinancer.
I am. I'm done. I'm cooked at this point. So it's unless they go way lower, I'm basically done. So they can't get me again, I'll tell you that much.
Folks, I don't know if you've seen this news, but the vacancy rate for regional malls in the United States reached a record 11.4% in the first quarter. That's up from 10.5% in the fourth quarter. And just my opinion, Chuck, with all the shopping that's moved online, I wonder if the mall vacancy rate, I think you're going to continue to see malls just close and collapse. But I think that vacancy rate is probably going to continue to climb.
Yeah, the question becomes, what do you do with this space? Because the companies that own malls, the Simon Properties of the yep. world and the Vornado Realty Trusts, they have billions of dollars invested in these malls. And it's not just that they have billions of dollars invested, they've borrowed billions of dollars to invest in these malls. Just, you know, if an investment idea is good, you better do it with leverage, right? That's their whole yep. mindset. It's they're not investing to make 2 or 3% a year. They want to make 10 to 15% a year. So the question is, what do these places do? Because, hey, if vacancy rates continue to go up, if you end up at 12, 13, 14% later this year, gee, like, you're obviously not going to be getting enough on your other tenants to right. make those specific malls profitable. So what do you do? And I think it's really going to depend on the footprint that you're talking about as being vacant. If you have a mall that has, you know, a previous Sears location that's vacant, and again, this is just, you know, it's the nature of the beast right now. I know Amazon's been snooping around and snatching up some of those types of places, mm-hmm. which you have to think it's basically, if you're a mall operator, you're letting the wolf into the hen house
yeah.
because they're going to eat you alive. It's just, okay, we need the rent, but this is going to kill us in the long run.
Well, you know, maybe that's senior kind of housing. You know, like we talked about commercial space in town and cities, right? It could be converted to housing. Maybe malls somehow can be converted to housing.
I'm sorry, Chuck. Did you guys see the deserted Macy's that was converted into a high school in Vermont?
I did. Yep, I saw that.
That's like, great.
There's like a Levi's poster in one of the classrooms.
Yeah. I think stuff like I think you're going to see more of that popping up than you would think. And not just high schools, but all kinds of stuff that you just you go, huh, I didn't think about that. But OK, I guess they're going to try it. You know, it's
yeah.
I think you're going to see companies trying to get creative on what they can stick into mall space. And some of it will work and some of it's just going to be, ugh. No, no, thank you. Like there's parts that you're just not going to be able to get to, I think.
Yeah, all the malls look for traffic creators, right? You know, your Apple stores, maybe traffic creators become things like hockey rinks, right? Sports facilities, because mom can come and drop the kids off at hockey practice and then go do her grocery shopping while she's at the rink. So. Who knows? Time will tell. Hey, coming up, we'll have the answer to our trivia question. We'll let you know who won.
For the most comprehensive coverage of the economy and the trends on Wall Street, keep it right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
death and taxes are the two definites in life, and that second one is going to be a major focus of the Biden administration. Hi, this is Mike Armstrong from the Armstrong Advisory Group, and regardless of which side of the political aisle you land on, changes to the tax code could be coming soon. President Biden says he will raise taxes, but has promised they'll only be for households making more than $400,000 per year. However, Biden is also considering lowering the estate tax exemption and making changes to the step-up and cost basis. The real question is, what does this mean for you? Our new guide out this month is called The Biden Tax Plan, Fact or Fiction. We'll walk you through the president's proposals, analyze how they could impact your wallet, and evaluate whether each change is likely to be passed. Call right now at 800-393-4001 and get your free copy of this new guide today. That number again is 800-393-4001, or you can download it from our website, armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Stony Brook Water. There's no more refreshing drink than ice cold clean water. And the new Ion coolers from Stony Brook Water, well, they provide that pure, fresh, incredible taste with every single glass. Get the new Ion water cooler from Stony Brook Water for your office. And if you order by April 16th, you get a 20% discount on installation. How great is that? Call 978-381-1476 or visit stonybrookwater.com/trial.
Following William Henry Harrison's death on April 4th, 1841, John Tyler was sworn in as the 10th president 2 days later. Harrison was the first president to die in office, and he is also the shortest-serving U.S. president ever.
The winner on this question, Bill from Southboro, taking home a $50 gas card. So congratulations to Bill.
You know, GM is all in as it relates to electric vehicles, and they are now, they just announced that they're going to be making an electric version of their Chevy Silverado pickup. And in a separate story, Chuck, I was reading, I think it was on Engadget, GM is making some pretty big advancements as it relates to battery technology that are going to make the batteries a lot cheaper, a lot longer lasting in terms of mileage, and a lot faster to charge. And that's kind of like the holy grail. That's what's holding back the electric car industry right now. It takes too long to charge, the batteries are too heavy, and they cost too much.
Yeah, the place where it's going to be tough and where I'm curious how it works out is in both the kind of this pickup slash light truck market, and specifically for people who do use their vehicles for towing. And I'll just give you an anecdotal example that I saw on Twitter. Guy owns a Model Y. I believe it was a Tesla Model Y. Normally has 300 plus miles of range, right?
Yep.
Decides during the pandemic, hey, don't want to live in San Francisco anymore. Going to move to Texas. A lot of people did that, right?
Yep.
Ships a bunch of his stuff off, but says, hey, to save on moving costs, I'm going to rent a trailer and tow it down to Texas. Trailer, when he finally, you know, loaded it up and everything, mm-hmm. He estimated that the trailer weighed about 2,000 pounds with all of his stuff in it. Below the, you know, I think the trailer hitch, I think, is rated up to like 3,500 pounds on the Model Y. Mm-hmm. Starts driving. Guess what the range reduction was when he was towing that?
Had to be massive, like 50%.
It went from over 300 miles of range. He ran out of gas, not gas, he ran out of charge after 104 miles.
Wow.
So I guess one of my questions is, when you talk about people that use their vehicles for towing a boat or towing a trailer, yep, or anything like that, that's going to be a real challenge, is overcoming that kind of range issue when you're towing that additional weight. So I think that by and large, for most people who on an average day are not towing a boat, you know, 5 days a week,
yep,
I think there's a real use case and a real price case in the next 3 to 5 years that EVs are going to be reasonable, cost effective, and reliable alternatives for them to use. For the person who is using it for those other things, I think there's a ways to go, but that's a niche market. That's not the primary consumer, obviously.
Yeah. Tom Brady getting ready for life after football, launching an NFT company. This is all the new rage, right? NFT is like the non-fungible tokens. What's the story behind the story here? Like a non-fungible token. I think I saw one sell for like $60 million or something. I still don't understand Bitcoin, let alone non-fungible tokens.
I know we've got to really we've got to work on this with you. I feel like normally it's interesting because you're so excited about electric vehicles, right? Which is this new technology, but we can't get you behind NFTs and cryptocurrency. What's the deal?
I understand electric vehicles. I don't understand cryptocurrency, and I definitely don't understand NFTs. But it must be good if Tom Brady's doing it.
I don't know if it's necessarily good, bad, or ugly, but what I can tell you is there's a ton of money flowing into it. And Tom Brady, in addition to being the single greatest quarterback and football player that I've ever seen, and probably the best at each of those in NFL history, he's very shrewd when it comes to his business dealings, you know, and trying to prepare for, you know, generating some income in a post football world. And so you're seeing, again, a ton of interest in these NFTs right now. I don't know if it necessarily has staying power, but I think if Brady, again, I don't know how much he's worth, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars with how much he's earned between him and Giselle. Yeah. If he wants to say, look, I'm going to take, you know, a little chunk of my net worth and put it into an NFT company to try to, you know, make something out of this. Doesn't that seem reasonable for a multimillionaire to do?
Yeah, but what is an NFT? You still haven't, I still don't understand what an NFT, a non-fungible token, is.
I don't know if I can do it in the last 40 seconds, but I'll try. It is a verified digital file that says that you are the exclusive owner of that file.
Mm-hmm. So if there's ever anything that sounds like, I thought Bitcoin sounded like a scam.
Let him finish.
Barry, let's say that the Declaration of Independence was signed online, not in pen. If I could prove that I own the Declaration of Independence, doesn't that have some value?
Not to me, no. But like somebody, obviously, like people are buying this stuff. I just don't. I don't see the value. No, you've got
a
file.
That was a pretty good example for 40 seconds.
No, but you got a file of a picture, right? So you know.
But that's only one use case of it.
I know. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what Brady gets into post football. Of course, he's not showing any signs of retirement, right? He's coming back for another season.
This one's flexible at 45.
Yeah. The S&P is down a point. The Dow's down 62 points, and the NASDAQ is off 19 points. Oil's down 43 cents a barrel. Gold's down to $1.80 an ounce. See you tomorrow, folks.
Bye. Thank you.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.